Lorraine Gallagher, the mother of the 13-year-old Donegal girl Erin Gallagher, who took her own life after being bullied, spoke yesterday about the efforts that she had made to solve the situation. She reported the harassment to the Gardaí 2 months ago. Bullyproof, a television programme which begins tonight on RTE1, presented by David Coleman, speaks to a number of young people who have or are still experiencing bullying. Their testimonies, it has to be said, are quite heartbreaking. The first girl we're going to hear is Jade, who's 13, and she told David Coleman when the bullying started.
It used to be just verbal, or like not even talking at all, just like ignoring and gestures and all and stuff like that, and call me fat and ugly and stuff. So I was really scared, especially of the physical bullying and stuff like that. At first, it was just kind of slagging me and stuff like that and avoiding me. And if I, like, touched something, it was like it was diseased and nobody else would touch it. And if I kicked the ball, nobody would touch it, or they just let it go off and they'd get a different one and bring it in instead. So I kind of stopped playing soccer because of that. And then after a while, it started turning to more like physical bullying, like throwing stuff at me and shoving me, like slamming me into fences and kicking balls in my face and stuff like that.
So what, when they first started and they were trying to tell you that you were diseased in some way, what were you thinking then?
I tried to just push it back down and not to be upset about it. But then sometimes it would get so bad that I'd just be crying and crying and crying for ages and ages. But most of the time I just tried to push it away and hide my feelings about it.
And when you think about it now, does it feel still the same when you think about it?
When I talk about it to somebody, or if I think about it, I feel really sad about it and my throat starts to hurt, like I'm going to cry.
Okay. So you're working really hard not to cry at the moment. What would happen if you cried now, do you think? Do you think that'd be okay? Would it help?
Sorry.
It's okay.
Just got too much. Just thinking about everything, it just made me so sad.
Very hard to watch and not be affected by it. That's Jade, 13 years of age, talking to David Coleman. The second child we're going to hear is Eamon. He's only 10. He lives with his mother while his father is working abroad.
Why don't you like school?
Bullies.
Bullies?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Tell me a bit about the bullies then. What kind of stuff do the bullies say or do to you?
Well, one called me a dickhead, one called me a jackass, one called me a pain in the ass. One's always angry with me and just always angry with me and moves all my stuff.
And I believe that you're getting really frustrated by it.
I definitely am.
But that you can't seem to really do anything that works to make it stop.
Nothing works. Mm. Absolutely nothing.
And what about the adults? Have the adults been able to make it stop?
Well, my mum isn't great with stuff. So she always just calls my dad.
So do you miss having your dad around then?
Yeah. Hi, Dad.
Hi, love. Can you see us? We can only hear you faintly, love.
I want to touch you. I need my dad here. I always feel like he's dead or he's gone to prison, something like that. You know how when you feel sad, you know, like in cartoons, when you feel sad, all these, like this cloud and all the rain comes down. That's what it feels like. You know what I mean? happens in all cartoons.
Two very poignant experiences of bullying, and you can see more of that on Bullyproof tonight on RT1, that programme presented by David Coleman. I'm joined in studio by Sean Fallon, an ex-school principal, and by Professor Mona O'Moore, founder of the Anti-Bullying Centre in Trinity College in Dublin. Mona O'Moore, why do children bully other children?
There are many reasons. I think we first of all should differentiate between the different types of bullying. So, for example, we have pure bullies, we have bully victims, and then we have the victims themselves. And depending on which category you fall into, there will be different motivations. So the child who bullies only is somebody who harasses other people in order to achieve their own goals. And that generally is that they have a great need to dominate, to control, etc. Now, the children who are the bully victims, they are the ones who both bully and are victimized. They have greater problems in managing their own emotions and equally of regulating them. And equally, they have a lot of hostile attributions. So these types of children then essentially would tend to be much more reactive, whereas our pure bullies are much more proactive. So they are operating from a very sort of cognitive perspective. They know precisely what is going to hurt and what is going to destroy somebody. They have absolutely virtually very poor on empathy, whereas the bully victims may have much greater sort of social skills deficits and need therefore to learn much more about regulating and managing their emotions. Now, children who are victimized, we must be careful not to stereotype them, because anyone can be victimized. It's often being in the wrong place at the wrong time. But I suppose the risk factors for them are the fact that they need to perhaps become a little bit more assertive in their behavior, because a bully essentially will take advantage of a child who then can't, in a sense, assert himself sufficiently to leave the bully sensing that he has no power, he cannot control, he cannot dominate. So I think it's very important in our sort of raising of awareness that we actually differentiate between, as I say, those children who I call pure bullies and those who I call bully victims, and then those who I call victims.
So what you're talking about in that instance is the victim taking control to a certain extent of the situation. What if they can't take control? What if there are, you know, there isn't just one person bullying them, but they are being bullied by a number of people? What should they do when that kind of thing begins?
It's a very good point. And first of all, I think they must learn not to blame themselves, that they are not at fault. The aggressor has the problem. So I think if you can all the time keep that to mind, so that you're not sort of personalizing and attributing the fault and blame to yourself. If you're outnumbered, which is why, you know, bullying is that form of aggression which is repeated, willful, and there's that abuse of power, then the important thing is to tell someone, to go to your parents, to go to your school staff, for example. And I think this is where we need greater collaboration between parents and staff. So parents can, in a sense, go to the school and the school can take note, open their eyes, take a look, see what's happening, and then take the bullies aside and work with them, because here's a wonderful opportunity to actually shape their behaviour. We're losing opportunities all the time by not actually challenging aggressive behaviour and taking them aside. So the message should be that if a child feels that they are not able to handle the situation themselves, tell their parents, tell their friends, and tell the school staff. And if they have friends, the responsibility on the friends should be to report, because we have to all the time promote, you know, the bystander activities, that, you know, responsibility has to be for the majority.
We'll talk to Sean Fallon in just a minute or so about what seems to be a very successful programme in his former school. Sean is now retired. But just because it's very much in the news this week and has been for the last number of weeks, the issue of cyberbullying. Is that more insidious? I mean, it's interesting you were talking about children perhaps being a little bit more assertive. What we were hearing today was, if you are being cyberbullied, you ignore it. You just absolutely do not engage with it at all. So that's kind of the opposite advice in that sense, isn't it?
Well, I think, as David Coleman said earlier today on Morning Ireland, that, you know, if you retaliate and you go in for the tit for tat, you're going to escalate the problem. So it's going to intensify. And as I say, if you're dealing with bullies who want to win, they want to control, they want to dominate, you can see then, you know, how it's really going to be a very sort of intense situation. So the idea would be, yes, don't retaliate, don't show any emotion. emotion, and then again record it so you have your evidence. But having said all that, there is research now to show that children who are victimized and who are potentially people who can be groomed, that the one way to get that to stop is through a sort of an aggressive response. So we have to be very careful with our advice. Again, it depends on the type of cyberbullying and the type of abuse that, young people are being exposed to.
Is there any sense in which cyberbullying is more of a female pursuit? Because it would appear that the cases most recently that have become very, very prominent, where unfortunately the victims of bullying have chosen to end their own lives, that it seems to be females. It seems to be young girls who are doing it. Does that mean that young girls are being bullied more online and that male bullying is more old-fashioned and direct?
No, I think from our own statistics in Ireland, and I think it tends to be the pattern throughout Europe, that yes, girls will be more cyberbullied. So, for example, from Ireland, we can say that one in four girls, for example, are involved in cyberbullying versus one in six boys.
But having
One in four are involved in cyberbullying. Now,
involved in as in, victims or as
well,
aggressors?
Well, we can say as victim, bully victims, and then as victims. So those three types that I've spoken about. So one in four children are involved, and we're talking about sort of teenagers here as well. So one in four girls versus one in six boys. Mm. But there's very little difference between the sort of prevalence of boys cyberbullying others and girls cyberbullying others. But girls are predominantly more victimized. Now, traditional bullying, of course, we must not forget that the majority of young people who are cyberbullied are also traditionally bullied. And we know now, for example, in Erin's case, that it wasn't just pure cyberbullying, but it was also their physical bullying. Children are being cyberbullied, there's always the threats of then what you might call online abusive behavior. So they know that they're getting it from every angle. But girls tend to use more psychological forms, more emotional forms. So in traditional terms, it would be exclusion. So it's kind of natural for them, in a sense, then to use their sort of verbal skills, and their cuter side will come forward.
And of course, the point being made this morning on Morning Ireland was that with cyberbullying and physical bullying, when you go home, it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop when you close the front door.
So you get the mean girl syndrome can operate very well in the cyberspace.
Sean, how were you introduced to bullying as a principal? Why did you become involved, and how did you become involved in this?
Can I just say, by way of clarification first, I wasn't a principal, I was just a teacher.
All right,
a practitioner, if you like. The first time I became involved really came indirectly from Mona, because one of my colleagues in my school, who was conscious of a bullying situation, went and did a summer course during the summer for 2 weeks with Mona in the anti-bullying centre in Trinity to equip herself better to deal with the situation. That was Mary Kent, and she and I set up our programme then, arising out of that. Could I just say before going on, because of the situation with the Gallagher family, it's a very difficult thing. And could I just say that I and many other people around Ireland will be very conscious of Erin and her family today and in the coming days. And also the families of Ciara Pugsley, who died about 6 weeks ago, and Chloe Coleman from Longford about a year ago, Phoebe Prince, whose dad is in Clare at the moment, he could be listening to this, Leanne Wolfe, Colette and Anthony are very conscious of this as well. And, you know, maybe we'll all say a prayer for them in the coming days, just because of their predicament, that things, you know, that they will cope as best they can.
Absolutely. Is it more difficult for secondary teachers, do you think, to detect bullying than primary teachers?
I think it is. The key there's a couple of key structural things that make it difficult. One is the key thing in relation to bullying that makes it so insidious is this ongoing repetition of stuff, repetition of name calling, or it doesn't matter what it is, but it's the repetition that never lets you go. The difficulty a secondary teacher faces is that 40 minutes later, the teacher leaves the room and another teacher is in. So if I see an incident, I don't recognise it as bullying. I just see someone being mean to someone or saying something, I said, cut that out and think we've moved on. But what I don't realise is that for the next several classes, the same kids are doing the same kind of things to the same person. And by the end of the week, that person may have had 30, 40, 50 different incidents. And I literally cannot know it because I'm not there. Mm. And if I could persuade the students to tell me, and if I then knew what to do about it, then we could actually deal effectively with it. And what we were able to do in our school was to find a way that the students would report it and to find a way to deal with it effectively. And it worked on both fronts.
OK, explain what you actually did, because it's a very, very interesting process and it does seem to have worked. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is a survey, isn't it?
Yeah, once you realise, well, the first thing really is you set down certain conditions for what you're going to do with the students, because you're going to be depending on the students. So the first thing you do is you're going to do a survey of the students to find out if there's anything going on, whether you know about something or not. Now, when you do, you say to the students, we're not going to punish somebody, because somebody here who's doing this doesn't realise how serious it is. How could they know how serious it is? It's just too big a thing that they're getting into. We'd like to talk to them, explain fully to them how serious a thing it is, and ask them to promise faithfully to stop. And on that basis, if they promise and keep that promise, then they will have no punishment.
It goes no
and
further.
There will be no,
but explain to me a little bit more about the survey. Is it in the form of a questionnaire? Is it written and is it confidential?
It is a questionnaire.
Is it anonymous as well?
It's not anonymous.
Right.
No,
okay.
They sign it. Because there is no punishment envisaged, there is no, this thing of ratting is based entirely on punishment. And if the punishment is taken out of the equation, the ratting thing isn't a thing. And so there's no reason to be, have some kind of a loyalty to somebody who is misbehaving. So you do the survey, it's a signed survey. The precondition
is in the form of a questionnaire?
Yes. And the precondition is that nobody's going to be punished.
And it's
survey,
confidential.
And it's completely confidential, and it is not just done in a class group.
But
at
you
a
are
time.
Asking children to, if they are aware of incidents of bullying, whether they are involved in as victims or as bullies, that they report these incidents in the survey.
Yes, and we ask them if they are involved, because they don't understand how serious it could be, that we ask them themselves if they've been involved or if they have joined in. Because remember, a person who is bullying, they usually have one or two people who are their henchmen, their henchpersons. Mm. And then if other people laugh along because something they did was either witty or something like that, then to the person on the receiving end, it looks like everyone's against them. So you need to dismantle that as well.
So then you talk to, if somebody is identified as being involved in bullying, you talk to them and you extract a promise from them, I will not do this again. What if they don't deliver on that promise?
Now, well, for a start, nearly three quarters of them deliver on that first promise and never break it, because we couch this in terms of a new, fresh start with no baggage, with nothing on their record, a clean sheet, and nearly everyone goes for that. Of the few who break the promise, because boys will be boys, girls will be girls, or something happens, or they pick on somebody else, or something just develops, we put them through the process a second time, but the second time, parents are asked to countersign that promise. Now, the first time parents are left out of it, not because there's anything covert happening, but it's like a yellow card in a football match. Mm. You don't report to the mammy every time a fella does something silly in a football match. But when the second time occurs, if there is, for the minority, there's a second time. Now, the number of people in my school who have broken that second promise is almost zero. And in the last 3 years, it has been zero. Which means that over a few years, the culture that developed in the school, which is very heavily weighted in awareness raising exercises where we show them films and videos and we get them to do worksheets and questionnaires to raise awareness and understanding that this bullying thing is unacceptable, it's dangerous, and we wouldn't want to be part of it. And against that background, the students see our approach then in dealing with the students involved as being very, very fair, and they know they're not going to be punished, and they are very, very aware of the ins and outs of it from our awareness raising programme. So they're actually happy to report to us on the basis that we will bring the bullying to an end, with the bully not punished, the bullying person. So it's a win-win outcome. The bullying person gets a clean sheet and is not condemned, and there's no self-fulfilling prophecy that would lead them into doing it again and again.
Okay, you have a particular attitude to punishment. You think that in general punishment can be counterproductive?
No, I think that in this particular kind of thing, bullying can be very counterproductive. Punishment can be. In other areas, I couldn't say. There is definitely a need for sanctions in a school code of behaviour. What we operate really is like a preliminary, and if this did fail, then you could revert to the code of behaviour and you need drastic...
Mona.
Yeah, just to say, I think that the important thing here is that there are consequences. And the consequences in Sean's sort of model is that the consequences are restorative rather than punitive. And when they are restorative, it gives the children the opportunity to take responsibility and to learn from their mistakes. And in that so-called promise, they're supposed to then come up with some way that they can sort of say what I'm going to do to make good. So it's very important in this restorative climate that we understand that it's not a question of just no blame. It's actually a question of teaching people to take responsibility. Mm. And that's what is so good, whereas punishment often leads to resentment and further aggression, etc. And equally, can I just say that Sean's approach is what we would call the whole school community approach to bullying. And that is the way I believe Ireland should go. We should have a national strategy where every school has to implement what's called a whole school community approach, where you have from the top down all members of the community getting the awareness about bullying so they can say then that I know what we are to do, and also that they get the skills to deal with it, and that the teachers, for example, can simply then differentiate between the different types and know how to deal with it, even under sort of crisis management and proactiveness, and then that the whole school community buys into it and develops that sense of responsibility and that sense of citizenship. So we all are responsible inside the school and outside the school to say no to bullying. And we need a national strategy. In fact, we need almost a national campaign, because we can see that lives are at stake here. And we put so much money into, you know, speeding on roads, into drink driving, etc., into smoking. Let's just put efforts to stop
the programme that Sean has described. It sounds ingenious to me. How does it sound to you as the basis for a national policy?
Well, absolutely, because equally, you know, I have personally developed a whole school approach to bullying, which we evaluated up in Donegal with the fantastic help of the Donegal Education Centre, Sally Bonner. And indeed, we have shown that we can reduce dramatically the level of bullying. And that model is there throughout Europe. And Sean has perfected it in his own school. And therefore, we have enough evidence in Ireland and indeed throughout Europe to show that this is the way to go.
Okay, Sean, final word to you, because you've retired as a teacher, but this is something that has become a passion for you, and this you're spreading the word on this. How can teachers find out more about this programme?
They're already finding out a lot with the help of the management bodies, the GMB, the two teacher unions for second level. They're both including little notices in their periodicals for it. But the one person, and I think he has the power to make a huge difference here, is the current minister. And I know he is willing, because he organised the anti-bullying forum and there's a working group working on it. There's a thing in the Education Act that says that a board carries out its functions in accordance with the policies determined by the minister from time to time. I think that is an enabling thing which would allow the current Minister for Education to say the following to schools. We want you, it is my policy, we want all second level schools, all schools, to have an anti-bullying, not only a policy which they have to have, but an implementation of a practice at least as good as mine, I would say, as the one that I'm here about, in schools. And he has the power to have it as his policy. And boards of management, I feel, would not go against that. They introduced SBHE and CSBE and things in the past.
I have to finish here, but this is information available on a website?
It is. It's a teacher's website, and all teachers and all school principals have been notified of it. I'd rather, because it's only focused on teachers, that the web address and so on.
So those
who are teachers
who need this information can get
access. They can get it from their management bodies, from their school principals. They all have been given the web address.
Sean Fallon and Mona O'Moore, thank you both very, very much indeed. We've had a number of texts coming in on the subject. I'll read those to you later, but Bully Proof airs tonight on RTE1 at 10:15.